The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Suzanne Heffner from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from The Triangle Gardener, your local guide to enjoyable gardening, and this is the March and April issue. We begin with a note from the editor. Everyone is a gardener in the spring, or so it seems. All it takes is a few warm days to send people of all ages and gardening abilities racing to their local garden center. Spring brings a time for hope and change, new plants, new garden designs, and new possibilities. And we all have five things that you can learn from this issue. One, adding just one pollinator plant in your garden can increase the butterfly highway in the triangle. Also, springtime is the best time to get those weeds under control in your garden. The distinction between a pest and a pollinator isn't always as clear-cut as you might think. The fourth one, in the 1600s, tomatoes were associated with werewolves. Before the Civil War, immigrants rejected eating tomatoes. Interesting. And the fifth one tells us that the perennial border at this Raleigh house was once described as the most avant-garde in North Carolina on a 1938 garden tour. I think that's what we should read about first. We have an article written by Erica Winston, who's a Raleigh Garden Club member. It's called Painting with Plants. Isabel Bowen Henderson was a talented Raleigh artist whose perennial border was once described as the most avant-garde in North Carolina on the 1938 garden tour. What made her border such a standout? Color. Isabel approached garden design as an extension of her artistic talents and orchestrated her front garden to create painterly compositions. She believed that planting a flower border with a good scheme for color was no easy task. Here are a few tips from the local legendary gardener. Focus on one season per section, she says. This will maximize the color in the perennial border. Begin with a stunning focal plant. Isabel's garden featured bluebells in early spring, followed by iris and lilies for the summer. She selected flowering perennials and foliage plants to complement the color and then added annuals to complete her painterly goals. Use a painter's color system. Isabel taught how to create special effects with color, bringing color charts to illustrate her techniques. For example, use cool colors along the background to create the illusion of distance, making a sense of spaciousness. Then, further enhance the effect by planting bright yellows along the foreground to draw the eye forward. Blend colors in harmonious ratios to achieve a pleasing balance. Bright colors need to be balanced with dark colors nearby in a 3-to-1 ratio of dark to bright to avoid a jarring visual tension. Embrace plants native to our Piedmont climate, she says. Isabel incorporated hardy perennials, shrubs, and native plants that thrive in our region's heat and humidity. Include flowering trees and shrubs. This will address the vertical dimension and draw your eye upward, making a small garden feel more spacious, plus providing wonderful color in season. Isabel's garden was a source of inspiration for the Raleigh community. She frequently opened it to visitors, and she used it to advocate for garden design as an art form. Her stunning borders brought her recognition across North Carolina, and her garden was regularly included on state and local garden tours. Elizabeth Lawrence, who grew up in the neighborhood with Isabel, referenced her garden and use of color 5 times in her seminal work, A Southern Garden. Isabel is said to have spent as much as 5 hours a day gardening, and she would fall asleep at night reading seed catalogs. Even so, she couldn't have done it alone. Her longtime gardener partner, Otis Harris, worked alongside her for years. Today, Decades later, her perennial border is still a beautiful feature of the marvelous home and garden estate. Over time, it has naturalized into more of a shaded garden. Now designated as a Raleigh Historic Landmark, the home and garden on Oberlin Road opened to the public on Sunday afternoon, March 30th. You can go and see it. You can find details at raleigh-garden-club.org/Isabel. Thank you, Erica Winston. It's time for the annual 44th annual Gardeners of Wake County Azalea Sale, the Triangle's premier azalea sale. It's beginning today at the North Carolina Fairgrounds in Raleigh at Gate 6. If you park near Gate 6 and go in, they are open from 9 to 6 every day, today through April 12th, but closed on Sunday. You can support the scholarship fund for the North Carolina State horticulture students by attending. You can find them on Facebook, the Gardeners of Wake County, Raleigh, North Carolina. Let's see, they've got, it is the premier azalea sale. They've got over 2,000 plants there for you to check out. More than 120 varieties of red, pink, white, purple, orange, and yellow. Every color. They've got native deciduous azaleas, also traditional evergreen azaleas. Some of them are re-blooming. Some are wolfpack red. Gotta have that. There are sizes dwarf to tall, and they also have registered Echo Plant Line re-blooming azaleas. Check that out. The 44th annual Gardeners of Wake County Azalea Sale at the fairgrounds. Gate 6, starting today. Enjoy the color, everyone. Now, here's an article about analyzing your site conditions if you are starting a new garden. Written by Dale Batchelor. She says that heating advice for more seasoned gardeners. They lived in their home for a full year before making significant changes to the landscape. Waiting was recommended so we could learn our site conditions, sun, soil, moisture, drainage, and become familiar with the property's existing plants. Observing which plants are thriving or struggling provides many clues for homeowners. While it takes a full cycle of seasons to determine if a plant is annual or perennial, or discover if the previous owners planted daffodils to pop up in the spring, do-it-yourselfers can follow procedures used by professional landscape designers to understand their own site conditions sooner. Some tools that make the process easier are accessible to anyone with a cell phone and internet connection. The first step to successful planting is determining how many hours of direct sun your site receives. A simple compass or cell phone app can determine if it faces north, south, east, or west. Unless shaded by trees or buildings, south-facing spots receive the most sun. Eastern exposures receive morning sun, which is ideal for part sun-loving plants, such as our native Pinkster Bloom, which is a rhododendron variety. West-facing beds often require drought-tolerant plants that can withstand several hours of intense late afternoon sun. Northern exposures are suitable for shade-loving plants that can withstand cold winter winds. Garden meters can be used to measure sun levels during the growing season, but knowing a location's cardinal points provides other critical information, too. Monitoring a site after a heavy rainstorm will help you determine how well it drains. Did the rain soak in quickly? Was there a puddle that lingered for days? Are there signs of erosion where the soil just washed away? Both the type of the soil and the degree of the slope help determine the answer to those questions. Simply sticking a shovel or trowel into the ground provides some answers regarding soil type. If you're in North Carolina, you know that we have clay. And clay soil typically drains more slowly than sandy soil, regardless of the degree of the slope. Some topographical features, such as steep inclines or sunken areas, can be located by careful observation. Homeowners who are comfortable with using technology may want to search their address on their county's Geographic Information Services, GIS, website for more detailed information. GIS searches generate downloadable maps with property details, including elevation contours, flood-prone areas, lot dimensions, building locations, etc. Challenging situations, such as eroded slopes or boggy or poorly draining areas, can be addressed by choosing plants well adapted for those conditions. Although much of my property is dry, depressions created when our land was farmed have created locations for me to grow moisture-loving plants such as trout lilies. Determining if your soil is acidic or more neutral can also be critical to successful planting. Here we get into some chemistry. Most native soils in the triangle are naturally acidic, the preferred soil pH for many co-evolved plants. However, indigenous soils are often removed in construction, or they're altered by landscaping practices such as using chemical fertilizers or adding lime to lawns. Garden meters and simple soil tests can be used to determine those pH levels. Detailed soil conditions can be learned through soil tests available through the County Cooperative Extension Office or the Agronomic Services Division of the North Carolina Department of Agriculture. They can help you out too. Existing plants. Studying your existing plants, whether naturally occurring or previously planted, is useful also for predicting which other plants will succeed there. This analysis will help you determine which plants are well sited and should stay, as well as identifying those that should be removed and replaced. Numerous native blueberries and established azaleas indicated that our soil was acidic without even performing a test. For a sunny spot in my front yard where plants compete for moisture with nearby loblolly pines, I found success with drought-tolerant species such as yellow false indigo and New Jersey tea. No site analysis is complete without extending your gaze beyond the property's boundaries. Are there other unsightly features that require plantings to screen them from view? Or is there a flowering tree next door that can be seen and enjoyed from your patio? Taking and studying photographs of proposed planting areas may also reveal features you have overlooked. To avoid overplanting or adding plants that will grow too large for a site at their maturity, it's important to learn the planting area's dimensions and distance between existing plants. And this can be done precisely using a tape measure or closely approximated by just pacing the planting area. I've determined that it takes 40 steps for me to walk 100 feet. Therefore, each of my steps measures 2.5 feet. Counting my steps as I walk between two points lets me quickly determine the distance between them. Thank you, Dale Batchelor. Let's see, I wanted to read about epimediums. Epimediums, these are star plants for dry shade. This article is written by Tina Mast. Do you think you might have dry shade in your garden? A tribe of trees around the house, or even one majestic old giant, often equals dry shade conditions. And that presents a challenge in finding plants that thrive in these circumstances, because even though many plants grow in the shade, and many others grow in dry soil, there aren't many that do well in the combination of the two. Enter epimediums. They're also known by the unfortunate name of barren wart, or the less fortunate moniker, bishop's hat, or my favorite, fairy wings. Whatever you call them, they're absolutely wonderful, low-growing perennials for shade, and a great answer to that question, what perennials can I plant under my trees? Lovely foliage shaped like elongated hearts or slender willow-like leaves is one attraction of epimediums. Another is dainty sprays of spring blooms. Flower colors range from yellow to white to deep pink for the most part, and some do resemble funny little bishop's hats. Others make me think of cute little spiders or a cluster of UFOs, and sometimes miniature daffodils. The flowers have a fairly long vase life, so they're fun to add to your floral arrangements, and they'll introduce a small dainty element to go with larger leaves and flowers. New growth on foliage is often blushed or outlined with burgundy or bronze, which adds extra interest. And I love the tidy clumps formed by most varieties. Others will spread into a nice non-invasive ground cover. Some varieties like Amber Queen and Domino are evergreen, providing year-round interest in garden presence as well as a second round of bloom. But are they easy to grow? Yes! The fact that they tolerate dry shade is a good indication of their lack of fussiness. The varieties Sulphurium, Fronleiten, Nivium, and Amber Queen are some of the most reliable we have seen at the nursery. One super cool cultivar is Sandy Claws, featuring elongated burgundy color foliage with tiny margins and larger than normal buttercream yellow flowers. I'm also fond of Pink Champagne with its fizzy pink flowers. Adding to their appeal, Epimediums are also deer and rabbit resistant and have few pest or disease problems. As much as I love hostas, Epimediums have them beat in this regard. They truly are low maintenance. The most I do for mine is trim some of the older, more weather-beaten foliage in late winter and maybe throw down some organic fertilizer every few years. Ideal conditions for them are shade to part shade in moist but well-drained soils, but they're highly adaptable plants. You'll need to water them regularly while they're getting established and during any extended droughts. As woodland plants, they like organic matter in the soil, so amend those heavy clay soils with a mix of 30% soil conditioner and 10% compost when you're planting to comprise about 40% of the mix they're planted in, and the other 60% being their native soil. Good companion plants for Epimediums include hellebores, trilliums, daffodils and primroses, and columbines that all will bloom in concert with Epimediums in the early spring. For the winter, fragrant winter daphne, hellebores, and certain varieties of sedge grass, or otherwise known as carex, will also grow in dry shade. And a planting of those four plants together can truly transform a dull, dry, shady part of the garden. For summertime, fragrant winter daphne, ferns, Solomon's seal, golden paper bush, mahonia, sedge grasses, hydrangeas, and hostas provide good summer accompaniments in foliage and or flowers. Hopefully, this has encouraged you to try these lovely and durable perennials in your landscape. Let's see, what else do we have here? Oh, tomatoes. The savory fruit, or is it a vegetable? This is written by Frank Hyman. If a beginning gardener only plants one vegetable, it will likely be a tomato. Given its history, it seems a minor miracle that we eat as many tomatoes as we do. For some, in the 1600s, tomatoes were associated with werewolves. In the next century, Linnaeus chose the Latin name Solanum lycopersicum, which means the nightshade wolf peach. Some English immigrants in America rejected tomatoes all the way up to 1860. It was the Civil War that finally mainstreamed tomato eating. This particular aversion to a healthy food item gave rise to the medical shorthand, the tomato effect, a term for effective therapies that are avoided for cultural reasons. Thank God that's all behind us. And now we can look forward to multiple medleys of maters. So, which ones will you plant this year and why? Here are some of my choices. Big slicing tomatoes for grilled cheese sandwiches and bright salads can be had by growing locally popular varieties like Cherokee Purple, German Johnson, Gold Medal, and Brandywine. These are all sturdy heirloom varieties that produce all season and grow very tall, and so they're called indeterminates. That means they keep on fruiting and getting taller until frost. The least bother way to keep them off the ground is with a 5-foot-tall tomato cage made from a heavy roll of remesh at any big box building supply store. Tomatoes for sauces like Roma, San Marino, and Amish paste are determinate, so they only grow about 4 feet tall. They also finish their season early with lots of ripe paste tomatoes. You can plant a second crop in May to extend the season. Cherry tomatoes that are popular in our area include Sun Gold and Sweet 100. Both of these will need tall trellises. Shorter varieties like Super Sweet 100 and Tiny Tim only grow to 2 to 3 feet tall. We have new dwarf tomatoes like Rosella Purple, Dwarf Sweet Sue, and Mr. Snow. And they grow 3 to 4 feet and can survive in large pots if you want to plant them in 5-gallon buckets or larger, and also in straw bales. Some tips for growing tomatoes. Because sunlight is food for plants, give tomatoes full sun or at least 6 hours of direct sun. More sunlight equals more plant food equals more and bigger tomatoes. Apply lime to the soil to make nutrients more available and to minimize blossom end rot. We don't want that. Set out your transplants once the ground is warm enough and after the frost is past. That's around mid-April here in the Triangle. For most varieties, expect ripe fruit around the 4th of July. Dig a hole for your tomato transplants and drop 2 big fistfuls of organic fertilizer into the hole. Remove the lower tiers of leaves before you plant them. Otherwise, diseases in the soil might bounce up by the rain onto the lower leaves. We don't want that. As the plant grows, keeping a 1 to 2 foot gap, like a moat, between the mulch and the lowest leaves is a good idea. Don't irrigate with a sprinkler. Wet leaves will just promote diseases. Use a soaker hose on the ground for irrigation and put a timer on the spigot. In the summer, aim for 2 gallons of water per week per square feet of bed. Cover the soil and the soaker hose with 2 inches of organic mulch, like shredded leaves, pine needles, coffee chaff, or wheat straw. Mulch is like birth control for weeds. Plus, it keeps the soil from drying out during droughts and from getting compacted by the rain, too. Trellis those tall growers, indeterminates, with a tomato cage anchored by bricks or a rebar stake. Trellis shorter growing determinants with what I call a cat's cradle. Online it's called a Florida weave, if you're going to look it up. Remove any trash and leaves that show disease. Smoosh any caterpillars you see and use the organic pesticide BT to control caterpillars. Studies show that removing suckers does not help in any way. If you just don't know what suckers are, then be glad. Tomatoes don't have to be fully ripe and on the vine. They can be harvested after they've started to turn red, and you can allow them to ripen in the kitchen, but out of the sun. Never put tomatoes in the fridge, and always eat tomatoes at every meal. Always. And repeat that process next year to keep on having tomatoes. Yum. Thank you, Frank Hyman. Let's see. You can buy tomato seeds from Wyatt Corals Seed Company. You can cultivate change one seed at a time. They are available at independent retail stores and hardware centers. Get those tomato seeds and start planting tomatoes. Fruit or vegetable, it's up for you to decide. Let's see how you can welcome mason bees into your yard. They are non-aggressive, do not sting. Their cocoons are mailed to you in the spring. If you order from Mason and Leaf Cutter Bees. Wow, you can look that up at rentmasonbees.com. Goodness, you can have mason bees in your yard. Okay, you can use nesting material that can easily be opened. Avoid bamboo or drilling logs. Let's see, you can give them food. They love early spring blooming flowers, and keep dandelions because those are the bees' first foods. I've read that elsewhere too. Dandelions are the earliest blooming food for bees. Bees also love sunlight, and let's see, they like clean, chemical-free mud. Help those bees. They are pollinators. They pollinate 95% of blooms. A mason bee will visit 2,000 blossoms every day. Goodness, they are non-aggressive and don't sting. Let's help keep those bees around. Plant those pollinator gardens. Yes. Okay, that is some exciting news from the Triangle Gardener newspaper. It is your local guide to enjoyable gardening. You can look these articles up and other information at trianglegardener.com. You can learn about epimediums, how to wash the roots of your plants, garden weeds, and designing a perennial border. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Suzanne Heffner, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for those who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. This is Suzanne Heffner joining you for Out in the Garden. I hope you are enjoying all kinds of spring gardening activities. I will see you next time.